Hello, 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 and welcome to this week's episode of Treat Yo Shelf. I'm Sophie Clark, and we're back again, and we're talking about lots of interesting things to do with children's literature again. This week, we're talking about teen girl fiction, and not just any teen girl fiction, but teen girl fiction, especially the funny stuff, and especially teen girl fiction written in the form of diaries and letters. That's right, epistolary fiction. I don't even know if I've said that right. I've only ever really seen it written down or said in my lectures when I was an undergrad, because that was a long time ago now, so let's all admit that I don't really know. Anyway, it's going to be great. We've got a lot to talk about, because last Sunday, I do apologise to anyone who tuned into the show due to some technical difficulties here in Cambridge. A minor outage in the studio meant that everything was offline. I couldn't do the show, and I didn't really know about it until I turned up at the studio happily at 10:45 and thought to myself, something's not right. So a tweet went out. Remember, you can follow us on at @tweetyoshelf for the latest in children's publishing news and views. A tweet went out to say that I was having technical difficulties, and then I realised that I would not be able to do the show, which was a very sad time, because I mean, I got out of bed and everything. It was a real bummer, let's not lie. Anyway, lots to talk about teen girl fiction. This was inspired by because Louise Renison, the author of the Georgie Nicholson and Tallulah Casey book, sadly died last week, and I was really sad about this because she was such a major part of my childhood, and I thought to myself, I want to do a show where we talk about the Georgie Nicholson books and we talk about Tallulah Casey. So I thought to myself, let's do a show about teen girl fiction, because I'm basically a teen girl still, even though I'm 25. Yeah, that's how it works. So the first song that we've got is Reach Out, I'll Be There by the Four Tops. This actually features in a Georgie Nicholson book. It's when she's kind of dancing around, making up a dance routine with her weird, creepy cousin, James. Anyway, they dance to this, and it's a great tune. So have a little dance yourselves.
Until happiness is just an illusion.
Oh, that was great, wasn't it? Love a bit of Motown and the Four Tops. Oh, just so brilliant. I'm really excited. So there's just some really great tunes today. And I say that every week because I get to pick all the songs, which means that they're all my favourite songs, unsurprisingly. But these ones are particularly, they mean a lot to me because these are the songs that I used to listen to when I was between the ages of 14 and 17, which means I'm probably a really weird teenager. Probably was a really weird teenager. Well, I know I was a really weird teenager, but these, it's a real mix-up of songs. So we're just going to have, I don't know, I'm going to have a bit of a bop in the studio. I'm the only person here. I've locked myself into the studio. I'm recording this on Thursday night because it's the only time I can do it. And I'm really, really desperate to do this show because I have so much to say. So it's a little bit creepy. The studio in Cambridge here, it's kind of like round the back in the campus. And it's like really tucked away down this weird alley. So yep, I've locked myself into the studio just to do my show. That is dedication to radio and dedication to teen girl fiction. Anyway, so we're gonna crack on straight away with because I have so much to say, and one of the big things that we're talking about is obviously the death of Louise Renison. We're gonna start kind of with that, just as, you know, just as the main thing, really, because that's where this show came from. So let's crack on with this week in children's literature. Oh, the music, it begins. This week in children's literature, the writer Louise Renison died. She was 64 and she was absolutely hilarious. One of my favourite authors, and I know from the massive outpouring of sadness on social media and in columns that a lot of women around my age were really sad about this, because they felt that Louise had managed to sum up what it means to be a teenage girl. And we'll talk about if you can sum that up and what that means a little bit later, but God bless you, Louise Renison, you were great. Also this week in children's literature, it was World Book Day. Yay, World Book Day, day specially to celebrate the things that are best in the world. Part of my favourite day, which is World Book Day, but my favourite bit of World Book Day is looking at all the costumes that people dress up in. Now, I work in a real job and unfortunately couldn't dress up in a costume. I mean, I could have, but it would have been a bit weird because nobody else was, and yeah, I don't know, I hadn't really thought about it. So I just kind of moped around. I put my hair in plaits, like Morticia Adams, but she's not really a book character, so... Oh, well, never mind, I tried. Anyway, it was World Book Day, and it was brilliant. There were lots of lovely things happening online, so make sure you go and check out the hashtag on Twitter, because there's lots and lots of things to discover. Also this week in children's literature, we're kind of covering more than a week here, about 10 days, but J.K. Rowling started releasing new stories about the American magical world. This is to provide some more background on American wizards and muggles, or as they call them, nomadges. Yeah, it's like short for no magic, nomadge. Yeah, just work with her on this one. I wasn't as excited about the kind of this announcement as ever, because I do really feel like she kind of needs to leave it alone. Like, we had Harry Potter and it was great, but just, you know, stop now, Jo, just stop. It does feel a little bit like she's milking it. Anyway, regardless, I'm still really excited for magical creatures. It looks great. But she has walked into a bit of a kerfuffle because she has appropriated certain aspects of Native American culture, and there's been quite a lot of controversy online about this. I will not do justice to the debate, so my best advice is to go and read some of the links about it, which I will post in the show blog, and kind of join in. But yeah, suffice to say, not particularly brilliant in that one. We've also seen the YA Book Prize shortlist announced. This is just, it's got a £2,000 prize attached to it. Oh yeah, who's excited? Me, I am, I really am. But some cracking books have been shortlisted. Holly Bourne, Am I Normal Yet? That's a really, really good one. I'd also suggest Unbecoming by Jenny Downham and The Lie Tree by Frances Harding, which we have talked about before on this show, and I'm in the middle of reading, as well as The Rest of Us Just Live Here by Patrick Ness. He's such a brilliant author. It just can't possibly go wrong. There's a load of different titles on the shortlist, but any one of them is a kind of a worthy winner. For what it's worth, I've got my money's on Asking for It by Louise O'Neill, or The Rest of Us Just Live Here by Patrick Ness. I think they're gonna edge it. So, you know, if you were a betting person, maybe you could go and do that. Non Pratt this week announced that she's writing a new book for Barrington Stoke. She's a wonderful author, and she talked at a careers event here the other week where I had just the most fabulous time. And I just want to be friends with all of them who talked, but yeah. But especially Non Pratt, because she was wearing a temporary tattoo, which I really enjoy. I thought that was quite cool because I'm impressed by things like that. Cassandra Clare, and her latest book came out this week, Lady Midnight. Haven't decided whether or not to buy it yet, so and you know, it does look like quite a whopping thick one. And then finally, it's getting good reviews though. And then finally, on the Guardian Children's Books site, there was an excellent, really, 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 really excellent Women in Fantasy Children's Books podcast. It featured the authors Alwyn Hamilton, Samantha Shannon, Sally Green and Lucy Saxon. Alwyn wrote Rebel of the Sands, which is which has just come out, which I bought, and it's just read it, had it signed. It's just brilliant. A fantastic example of world building in fantasy fiction. Samantha Shannon, obviously, very, very popular author, and Sally Green of the Half Bad, Half Wild, Half Lost series. I haven't read Lucy Saxon's books, which is terrible, so I'm gonna have to go away and read them, but I listened to that and it was just a really, really wonderful example of the craft and thought that goes into writing for children. So that was this week in children's literature. Fade out. Anyway, yes, so apart from this week in children's literature, we're obviously talking about teen girl fiction. So when I found out that Louise Renison had died, I was actually standing around in King's Cross waiting to get the train back to Cambridge, and it just made me so, so incredibly sad. I don't know if I've ever cried at the death of someone I just didn't know before, or someone famous I didn't know. I mean, I've cried about bad things that have happened in the world before, but this was really targeted because I just was so sad that this great light in humour and writing had gone out. And she has made me cry. Louise Renison has made me cry many, many times in the past, but always through laughter, very much always through laughter. And this time it was very much through sadness. We're going to talk about teen girl fiction. We're going to talk about how funny it can be. We're going to talk about why it's written in the form of diaries and letters. And so basically, kind of rewind to about, I think the first George Nicholson book came out in about 1999. I might not have picked it up till about 2001, so a couple of years later. I was 11. So you're going to have to rewind. You have to think about being young, being a young folk, and that's the inspiration for our next song. This reminds me of being a teenager, but I don't know if it actually came out when I was a teenager. It definitely played in the first episode of Gossip Girl, which is the only episode of Gossip Girl I've ever watched. This is Young Folks by Peter, Bjorn and John.
Oh.
That was Young Folks by Peter, Bjorn and John. I don't know if I feel any younger, but I'm going to pretend that I do. So we're rewinding back to our youths, and we're thinking about what it's like to be a teenager. And, you know, whether you're a girl then, or you wish you were a girl then, or you're a girl now, being a teenage girl, God, it's crazy. It's really mental. I met up with a friend of mine on Monday, and we used to read these books together, and we just were talking about how genuinely bonkers teenage girls are. Partly because I think, especially if you're very good friends and you have a good friend group kind of around you at school, gosh, you spend all of your time with them. Like, you're in lessons with them, you spend before school, break time, lunchtime, usually after school at some, you know, kind of activity, you know, with them all the time. And you make up this language that no one outside of your group speaks, really. I mean, not a real language, but it's like so many in-jokes, notes, drawings. We were forever writing in people's planners and scribbling on things and passing notes and, you know, just stupid things all the time. Like, the level of the amount of words that we must have spoken and written and documented, my goodness, so many, just all the time, just saying things. I think you're trying to form your identity through words. I haven't really stopped doing that, but I think you have to keep saying things to just do something. You're just desperate to amuse yourselves. You have so much energy all the time. And then even when you don't see people at school, at the weekend, you go and see them. And you never get any sleep at sleepovers because you spend all your time talking as if you've not done enough of that. And I realise I sound quite a lot like my own parents. Why were you up till 3 o'clock in the morning talking at sleepover? Haven't you done enough of that? No, clearly not. Clearly never enough talking. So, yeah, and that's what the Georgia Nicholson books are, definitely. It's a lot of talking. Like, it's written in the form of diary entries, but all the time it's just recorded conversation, a lot of recorded conversation of what's gone on and who said what and this happened and then, oh my God, and they said my nose was only 3 out of 10 and, oh, everything is terrible and I, oh no, it's all just too much. So, yeah, being a teenage girl is kind of crazy, and I think there's a specific... Although I said we're talking about teen girl fiction here, we're actually talking about a very specific subset of teen girl fiction, that is humorous, epistolary teen girl fiction. So I'm talking about Princess Diaries, I'm talking about Georgia Nicholson, Tallulah Casey, goodness, what else am I talking about? Many, many things. I'd even go so far as to put Rainbow Roll, Attachments, and some other books by Meg Cabot, The Boy Next Door, Boy Meets Girl, Everybody's Got One. They're kind of intended for like mid-20s readers. So some people might call them chick lit, but I think they very clearly grow out of this kind of documenting genre of women and girls just saying things and defining themselves. And to a certain extent, I'd even class Sarah Manning's Adorkable in there because a significant part of the novel is formed from Jean's blog posts and Twitter, and I think that definitely falls in the kind of epistolary fiction boundary. I'm going to play another song, and then we're going to talk about what epistolary fiction actually is. But yeah, this kind of subset that we're talking about, it sums up how bonkers teenage girls are. If you've never met or known a teenage girl, well, your life is poorer for it, but also probably calmer. Yeah, it's just so mental. I mean, why did I think that hanging out on the chemistry bag, the bag racks outside chemistry, that was like the coolest place in the world? I was obsessed with, you know, small pictures of funny things. That hasn't really changed, but now they're Instagram sized at least. I just don't know. You kind of look back and you're like, what did we talk about all the time? But there you go. I have an hour and a half show every week where I talk about children's literature. So what do I talk about all the time? Who knows? One of the songs that I really associate with this time in my life, kind of from about the age of 13 to 18, around then, is this song. It's by the Ting Tings. It's actually on the soundtrack to Anger Songs and Perfect Snogging, which is the Georgia Nicholson film. It's called Great DJ, and oh, it's just brilliant. We'll be right back. That was the Ting Tings with Great DJ, and I had a little dance around the studio. Oh, it was beautiful. We're talking about epistolary fiction, and I just thought I'd give everyone a little background on what that actually is, because although I was like, yeah, we're going to talk about epistolary fiction in relation to teen girl novels, my aunt, who is a devoted listener to the show, but also doesn't have a background in literature, was like, what? And so I thought, yeah, I should probably explain what that is. So if you actually go to Google and type in epistolary fiction, you have to scroll through quite a few of the little top row. I mean, it will bring up at the top, it says epistolary novels. If you, it starts off with like the high class ones, you know, Dracula, Pamela, Clarissa, you know, The Colour Purple, yeah, Les Liaisons Dangereuses, you know, bit of Jane Austen. It quickly rifles through Stephen King, you know. Yep, absolutely. All the good ones. Saul Bellow. Oh, yeah. Bit of Anne Bronte. Yep. Just rostering through these. And then it very quickly sort of, and then right at the end, almost as if to say, oh, it really is an epistolary novel, but we didn't really want to be associated with it, is Angus Thongs and Full Frontal Snogging by Louise Renison. Just go all the way to the end and you'll find it. That's where it is. So Wikipedia defines an epistolary novel that is, you know, that Google has said is Angus Thongs and Full Frontal Snogging, the first in the Georgia Nicholson series, defines it as a series of documents, the usual for a novel written as a series of documents. The usual form is letters, although diary entries, newspaper clippings and other documents are sometimes used. Recently, electronic documents, such as recordings and radio, blogs and emails have also come into use. Oh, well, that was a bit condescending. Thanks very much, Wikipedia. And then it provides you with a list of contemporary epistolary novels, because that's absolutely not a mouthful and definitely not something that you should say if you've had any drink. And if you scroll through that, you'll find such classics as Helen Fielding's Bridget Jones's Diary, and also Stephen King's Carrie, as we mentioned earlier, even a bit of C.S. Lewis there, the Screwtape Letters, and just keep going all the way through, and you'll get to Renison. Oh yeah, because technically any novel that's written in the form of written communication is what I'm going to go with. You know, I'm not even going to stand with documents, I'm going to go with, yeah, written communication between the main character, the protagonist, and an other, so either an unseeing, unreplying entity, like a diary or a memo pad, or other characters. That's an epistolary novel. So all of the Georgia Nicholson ones are, because they're all her to her diary. So are the Tallulah Casey books, because they're all her to her performance arts inspiration book. And the Rainbow Rowell novel Attachments is all emails, so that definitely counts as well. There's little alternating chapters, bits of email and then bits of sort of normal prose. But that's, you know, by the by. So we'll begin with talking about Georgia Nicholson. This is something I picked up when I was maybe 11, and I'm going to read you the first paragraph of the first book. It's hilarious. The writing is still hilarious now, even though I'm 25, because once I found out about Louise Renison's death, I went and bought all the Tallulah Casey books, the three of them, Withering Tights, Midsummer Tights Dream, and The Taming of the Tights. So good. And I actually laughed so hard on the train into work that I snorted some overnight oats out of my nose, and people actively moved away from me on the train. They actively sought other seats, which is fair enough, because it was really, really gross, but it was obviously really, really funny. And I think it's one of the first books, Georgia Nicholson is probably the first book I can ever remember finding really, really, really funny and actually feeling like kind of reflected my life, rather than a lot of the teen fiction books which I read where I thought, but this just isn't true. This isn't what my life is like. I definitely am not glamorous and popular. because I was neither of those things. But instead, these are the real problems of my life. So the first entry reads, Sunday, August 23rd, 10 o'clock a.m. There are six things very wrong with my life. One, I have one of those under-the-skin spots that will never come to a head, but lurk in a red way for the next 2 years. Two, it is on my nose. Three, I have a three-year-old sister who may have peed somewhere in my room. Four, in 14 days, the summer holes will be over, and then it will be back to Stalag 14 and Oberfuhrer Frau Simpson and her bunch of sadistic teachers. Five, I am very ugly and need to go into an ugly home. Six, I went to a party dressed as a stuffed olive. I mean, that's just, I just think that's a hilarious opening to a book. And as you read down that list as a, you know, 11, 12, 25-year-old girl, you think to yourself, oh my goodness, I've done at least one of those things. Oh, I am suffering from at least one of those things. Yeah, it just hilarious. And I think because they were some of the first ones that I remember making me laugh a lot, they have really, really stuck with me. I'm going to play another tune now. Now that we've kind of set those boundaries, we know what epistolary fiction is. We're going to talk a little bit more about why they're so hilarious and why that matters. We're going to play my song this time, this time around, is You Can't Hurry Love by The Supremes. This reminds me very much of, I was in a play at school, but only as kind of in the chorus, you know, in the background of every scene. So I kept having to turn up to all these stupid rehearsals, only to be kind of actually needed for about half an hour, you know, in a 6 hour day. So I spent a lot of time just listening to songs on my iPod mini, which was my most prized possession. It was silver, gorgeous. Anyway, this was one of the songs that I'd uploaded. I was really obsessed with Motown when I was about 16. I don't know why, just obsessed with the sounds of the 60s, which is a program on Radio 2. So this is You Can't Hurry Love by The Supremes.
I need love, love to ease my mind. I need to find someone to call mine. But mama said you can't hurry love. No, you just have to wait. She said love don't come easy. It's a game of give and take. You can't hurry love. No, you just have to wait. You gotta trust, give it time. No matter. Trust, give it time, no matter.
That was The Supremes with You Can't Hurry Love. Oh, a perfect slice. Just, you know, 2 minutes or 3 minutes of just perfect. Perfect song making. Just so great. So we're talking about funny girl fiction and why it matters. Well, I think it matters because quite often, especially in fantasy fiction, I don't really know why, you tend to see female protagonists who are like suspiciously perfect. You know, they're so beautiful, even if they don't realise it. And all they have to do is take off their glasses and they, you know, win. Oh, they're so beautiful as soon as they kind of, you know, put some nice clothes on and take off their glasses or whatever, and they have magic, or they're really strong or fast or, you know, powerful, and oh, they're just so wonderful, and they kind of race around, you know, saving the world and just being generally brilliant. And that's great. We need strong female protagonists for people to look up to. But I also think that you kind of want to see, you know, you want to read a real life book where the person in it is like you, but a better, funnier version of you that would be your life if you were in a book. Or at least I did and do quite often. I really enjoy reading about people who, you know, it's relatable. You know, you can do this. You know, one of the best quotes from the whole series is, she's talking about her family. George is talking about her family, and she says, honestly, what planet do these people live on, and why isn't it further away? And you just have to sympathize with her, because what teenager, you know, you think to yourself, oh goodness, yes, that's how I feel all the time. You know, what, who are these people, why are they making me do this? And your family are just the most embarrassing thing ever. I mean, I don't know, I love my family and I get on with them really, really well now, but they're just you know, I don't think you always feel like that when you're a teenager. It's very awkward. And a lot of the time you're like, oh my God, why am I related? Am I related to these people? Surely not. I will never grow up to be like them. And then you grow up and you become like them and you're quite glad about that. But I think at the time, you don't. But part of the humour, as well as being relatable, is to show that it's okay to be a bit bonkers, and it's okay to be the odd girl out and to feel a little bit all at sea when you're kind of, you know, spending time with other teenage girls, because there are teenage girls who look amazing and they're all put together and they have all the right clothes and they're really cool and they listen to all the right music, and you know, you're reading Lord of the Rings and listening to Motown, and you know, your hair has broken three bobbles that day. You know, that's the kind of person I was, and that's when you think to yourself, oh my goodness, how am I meant to fit in here? And school can feel horrible because it's just filled with all these people, and you just think, what's happening? I do not belong here, and I don't fit in, and it's terrible, and no one's talking about what I want to talk about and things like that. So I don't know, yeah, it's okay to be a bit bonkers. Georgia in one of the books dyes her hair, but she forgets she doesn't actually dye it. She bleaches it with household bleach. She just puts a streak in to look really cool in front of Robbie, and then he comes down to her house and she tries to twist her newly bleached hair round her finger and she snaps it, and she just goes, and that's when it fell off in my hands. In Tallulah Casey's books, she breaks out into Irish dancing when she feels uncomfortable, just singing to herself, hiddledy diddledy dee. It's just kind of, yeah, these weird responses that you have where you're just so put on the spot and you feel so awkward, and you just do something, anything to make the awkwardness go away. And quite often that makes it about 50 million times worse. But there you go. In The Princess Diaries, the awkwardness is kind of thrust upon her because she's kind of muddling along. She's doing okay in her own little group, and then she discovers that she's a princess. And once everyone finds out about that, it suddenly becomes like a big deal, and the awkwardness becomes not not good enough for her friends, because she is. Mia is always good enough for her friends, and she has a very close circle throughout the novels. But it's more in you're not good enough. She's worried about not being good enough to be a princess. So it's additional. I'm not a good enough teenager, and also I'm not a good enough princess. What is happening? Yes. So The Princess Diaries and the Judge Nicholson and Tallulah Casey books, I'm focusing on these because they're the central ones that I read when I was a teenager. But if you have any suggestions, please feel free to tweet me or email me, treatyourself99@gmail.com. You know, I'd love to hear if you think, oh, she's just completely ignored this amazing diary series. I mean, I've been trying to trace the history of the diary and the epistolary teen girl fiction. I kind of see it as starting as early as Dear Nobody by Bernie Doherty, about the girl who's pregnant and she's writing letters to her unborn child. But the ones that have diaries are the ones I find most fascinating, because there's actually logistics behind keeping a diary. A, who's going to see it? I don't know if I've ever lived in a house where if I've written something down, nobody would have snooped. People snooped on my diaries all the time. That's why I stopped keeping them. Just kept it in my head all the time. Just a mental chronicle of how rubbish everything was and terrible. But every time I tried to write something down, someone read it, because my siblings could all read, and like George's, who's three and can't. Also, quite often in both the Princess Diaries and in the George Nicholson books, they have their diaries with them all the time. And that's like, logistically, they're writing in them. You know, Georgia writes in hers when she's standing in a postbox outside some boy's house. I mean, that just wouldn't happen in real life. That just is never going to happen. You're not going to write a diary entry at 10 o'clock at night and then another one at 2 minutes past 10, chronicling how you've changed in the last 2 minutes. But that's what happens in these books, because that's what you can say in fiction. Because through epistolary novels, it passes through kind of two frames of narration, I see it as anyway, because the character is technically retelling something that happened to them previously because they're recording it in their diary, but the retelling is coming through the lens of the character moulded by the author. So you're almost at two removes from what actually happened. So that's why it's so hilarious, because the character, it's okay for the character to always have the last word and to always know what to say, because they've technically had a chance to, you know, there's kind of, it's this idea that it's not happening as you read it. It's already happened in the timeline of the novel, and it's simply being recounted to you via the medium of the diary. Anyway, oh, two frames of narrative, two removes away from the story, everything's being recounted. Oh, plot timeline, reading timeline, they're different. Oh, I know, so exciting. We're going to have another little song. This is not from anything to do with my teenage years. This is something that I've been listening to like a lot recently. It's from the Broadway soundtrack of a musical called Hamilton. It's called Helpless. For anyone who's interested in the following things, American history, spoken word poetry or musicals, you should go away and listen to Hamilton now. Then you should just listen to it again and again. It's 2.5 hours long, so in a day you can get through it 4 times and you still won't be sick of it. This is one of my favourite songs from it, and it's just wonderful. It is told from the perspective of a teenage girl, so that's the link that we're going with here. It's about that feeling you get when someone you've got a crush on looks at you and you just think, oh, I'm helpless.
Light. We were at a revel with some rebels on a hot night, laughing at my sister as she's dazzling the room. Then you walked in and my heart went boom, trying to catch your eye from the side of the ballroom. Everybody's dancing in the band's top volume, grind to the rhythm as we whine and dine. Grab my sister and whisper, yo, this one's mine. Ooh. My sister made her way across the room to you. Ooh. And I got nervous thinking, what you gonna do? She grabs you by the arm, I'm thinking I'm through. Then you look back at me and suddenly I'm helpless. Oh, look at those eyes. Look into your eyes, oh, skies, and I'm helpless. Down for the count and I'm drowning and I'm helpless.
I am so into you.
Look into your eyes, oh, skies, and I'm helpless.
taking me?
I'm about to change your life.
Then by all means, lead the way.
Elizabeth Schuyler, it's a pleasure to meet you.
Schuyler.
My sister.
Thank you for all your service.
If it takes fighting a war for us to meet, it will have been worth it.
I'll leave you to it.
1 week later, I'm writing a letter nightly. Now my life gets better every letter that you write me. Laughing at my sister because she wants to form a harem.
I'm just saying, if you really love me, you would share them.
Ha! 2 weeks later, in the living room, stressing. My father's stone-faced while you're asking for his blessing. I'm dying inside as you whine and dine. And I'm trying not to cry because there's nothing that your mind can't do. My father makes his way across the room to you. I panic for a second, thinking we're through. But then he shakes your head and says, be true. And you turn back to me, smiling.
I don't have a dollar to my name, an acre of land, a troop to command, a dollop of fame. All I have is my honor, a tolerance for pain, a couple of college credits and my top-notch brain. Insane, your family brings out a different side of me. Peggy confides in me, Angelica tried to take a bite of me. No stress, my love for you is never in doubt. We'll get a little place in Harlem and we'll figure it out. I've been living without a family since I was a child. My father left, my mother died, I grew up buck wild, but I'll never forget my mother's face, that was real. As long as I'm alive, Eliza, I swear to God you'll never feel so.
I do, Eliza. I never felt so.
Yeah, my life is going fine, cause Eliza's in it.
I look into your eyes and the sky's the limit.
That was Helpless from Hamilton. Oh, wasn't it great? I'm loving the soundtrack to that. I have listened to it an awful lot over the past couple of days. It is really, really brilliant. We're talking about epistolary fiction. We're talking about funny teen girl fiction. We're talking mostly about George Nicholson and Tallulah Casey and The Princess Diaries, because that's what I wanted to talk about this week. And yeah, so we are, because it's my show. Anyway, so we're talking about why these books are so funny and what the point in making them funny is. And whilst I do believe that it reflects very well on kind of for teen girls reading them, it's great to see someone who's more realistic. It's great to see someone who's more like yourself, who also does really, really stupid things and says stupid things and, you know, just is constantly inventing in-jokes and doing other, you know, stuff with their friends, and understands that kind of all or nothing aspect of teen friendship. You know, you love these girls, oh my god, she insulted my fringe, I hate her. Well, if you hate her, I hate her. Oh no, now we like her again because this happened. And oh, it's up, it's down, it's a roller coaster. And within, you know, a day you've fallen out with three people and you're drastically in love with someone else. You know, it just, every day is like that. It's exhausting being a teenage girl. Oh, being any girl, it's exhausting. But part of the source of humour when I was reading the Tallulah Casey books, because obviously I didn't read those when I was the same age as the protagonist, I read them now, and they were very, very, very funny. But a large part of the humour comes from realising how silly teenage girls are and can be when they're in a big group all together. And thinking about how that, you know, yeah, you're up and down, it's a roller coaster, but those are your biggest problems. You're not worrying about how I'm going to pay my rent this month, or have I got enough money to do this, or I need to pay this back, or I need to do this at work and this has a bearing on this, and oh, you know, sort of bigger worries. Am I doing enough in my career? Am I doing everything right? I need to apply for this job. I need to, oh goodness, I've got this interview, I need to prepare for that, you know. If your biggest worry is, I think someone, you know, set their fringe on fire in chemistry, you know, that's a pretty good way to be, you know, if that's your only worry. So these big worries that they talk about and they're really, really worked up about, and that quite a lot of the humour in the books comes from, is because they're so self-absorbed. These characters are all really quite self-absorbed and just talk about themselves all the time, because it's kind of fascinating, and they don't know who themselves are, really, if that makes any sense. You know, when you're a teenager, you're trying to discover who you are and you're forming who you are, sorting it all out, and they're just trying to figure out who they are and what they want to do. But it's so, it's so interesting. In contrast to the, you know, Georgia, Tallulah, Mia sorting themselves out, figuring out who they are, you've kind of got, on the other hand, you've got Jean Smith in Adorkable, who is so sorted, so cool, living on her own, age of 17, got her own blog, she's kind of like an international consultant, you know. It's a novel, it's meant to be far-fetched. At the same time, she's very, very realistic, because she loves Haribo and essentially lives off them and doesn't like to do any cleaning and is just great. But was anybody ever as sorted and as cool as Jean Smith at the age of 17? I mean, I know I wasn't. I was much more like Michael Lee, who's the love interest in that book. That, well, I say love interest. They have equal storytelling rights. Alternates chapters, and they're very much equal protagonists. So I was much more like Michael Lee. Lives at home and is under pressure to go to a good university and get good grades at school and keep themselves sorted and, you know, do all their extracurricular activities and stuff like that. So, I don't know. But sometimes it's nice to see an alternative telling, to imagine how you could be if you were better, to imagine yourself as Jean Smith. So are teenage girls silly? Are they taking themselves too seriously? Are they self-absorbed? I mean, yeah, kind of all of those. But in a really, you know, great way. I don't think I was ever, you know, being super malicious and horrible or destroying anyone's life when I was a teenager. I hope not. But it's this kind of, like, not cliquey, but you have your group and you gather them around you, your ace gang, and you do stupid stuff together. And that's what we're going to talk about when we come back. We're going to have a little song, because we are. This is a song that I think I must have played a lot at house parties when I was about 16 or 17. This is very, very popular. It's maybe a little bit emo. This is Sugar We're Going Down by Fall Out Boy.
Am I more than you bargained for yet?
Sugar We're Going Down by Fall Out Boy, which took me back to my youth. my not so wasted youth. That's what I'm gonna class that one as. Anyway, so we're talking about the stupid things that teenage girls do together, and there's all these like stories in the media about how teenage girls are so vapid, or they're part of a girl gang or whatever, and I'm not saying that doesn't happen, but I would say that most teenage girls are just basically gossiping and making each other laugh, and 90% of what they do is done to make someone else in the group laugh. A classic example of this comes from the George Nicholson books, when they make themselves, there's the Viking Bison Disco Inferno, that is a dance. You can find the instructions online. At the end, you get down onto one knee and you shout "Horn!" very loudly. So I'm sorry if that just came through your radio really, really loudly. That's what you do at the end of the dance. Shout "horn" very loudly. Sven teaches them that. You can also make a glove animal. Oh yeah, you could do that. That means that you put your beret on, you pull it very low over your eyes, then you put sunglasses over the top of it and shove gloves in the side over your ears. That's a glove animal, and it has sunglasses to prevent snow blindness. And then one of my favourite things that they do is during the school photo, Georgia and the Ace gang sellotape their noses up to look like a character in an old cartoon. And you just have this image. They do it very quickly, kind of behind the teacher's back. So she checks them all, turns around to take the picture, and they just sellotape their noses up very, very quickly. And it's just so, it's the whole thing is just so funny. And I'd say that, yeah, it's all to make someone else laugh. And I, yeah, it's just desperately trying to amuse yourself while you're kind of, you know, if you're going to be at school for 8 to 10 hours a day, you know, you've got to try and perk it up somehow, and part of that is being a teenage girl is just trying to make yourself just be funny and just be really funny. And sometimes that leads to you thinking that you're really cool, and you're absolutely not. You're really not. It's just, yeah, just trying to do everything. One of the things about the Princess Diaries is that she's kind of less about making people laugh, although that is definitely kind of Mia's way of dissolving tension, but also about kind of pleasing people. She's always agreeing to things and saying she'll do things to stop arguments and to avoid confrontation, which is this idea of her throughout the whole series kind of growing a backbone and learning to stand up for herself and things like that. But you've got to kind of, you know, glove animal and just having in jokes. It's all about, in these books, it's all about making yourself a family of friends, if that makes any sense, about making the people that you spend time with just sort of be so close to you absolutely all the time. For Tallulah and Georgia, and also I guess for Mia kind of in a way, the thing about it is that, like, the world to them is just an expanse of possibility. They haven't done anything yet, but they haven't messed anything up yet either. They haven't closed down any avenues to themselves. Everything is open to them, and it's just kind of so, that's so wonderful and refreshing to read this idea that they, and that in a way they kind of know that they can do anything. Like, that's the idea. Like, there's never a sense of, oh no, we can't do that in either of the books. I mean, obviously, because it's a novel and the author can make anything happen, but the idea is that they're never defeated or defeatist about anything. They're always just kind of seeking for it because they have this lovely safety net of family and friends who are like family to kind of fall into and to support them through anything. And I think quite often a lot of teenage girls don't realise that that's actually what they have around them. They think that their family is just, it's just out to get them and embarrass them, but that's actually not true. But I think seeing that although your family might be out to embarrass you and there to just cause you endless social pain, they're behind you all the way. They really, really are. Our next song is going to be another 60s hit. This is Do Wah Diddy Diddy by Manfred Mann.
There she was, just walking down the street singing
Do Wah Diddy Diddy Dum Diddy Do,
tapping her fingers and shuffling her feet singing
Do Wah Diddy Diddy Dum Diddy Do.
She looked good,
looked good,
she looked fine,
looked fine,
she looked good, she looked fine, and I nearly lost my mind. Before I knew it, she was walking next to me singing
Do Wah Diddy Diddy Dum Diddy Do,
holding my hand just as natural as can be, singing
Do Wah Diddy Diddy Dum Diddy Do.
We walk on,
walk on
to my door,
my door.
We walk on to my door, then we kissed a little more. Oh, I knew we was falling in love. Yes, I did, and so I told her all the things I'd been dreaming of. Now we're together nearly every single day singing
Do Wah Diddy Diddy Dum Diddy Do.
Oh, we're so happy and that's how we're gonna stay singing
Do Wah Diddy Diddy Dum Diddy Do.
Well, I'm hurt, she's mine,
she's mine,
I'm hers,
she's mine.
Wedding bells are gonna chime. Oh, I knew we was falling in love. Yes, I did, and so I told her all the things I'd been dreaming of. Now we're together nearly every single day singing
Do Wah Diddy Diddy Dum Diddy Do.
Oh, we're so happy and that's how we're gonna stay singing
Do Wah Diddy Diddy Dum Diddy Do.
Well, I'm hers,
I'm hers,
she's mine,
she's mine,
I'm hers,
she's mine.
Wedding bells are gonna chime. Oh, 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 oh yeah.
Do Wah Diddy Diddy Dum Diddy Do.
We'll sing it,
Do Wah Diddy Diddy Dum Diddy Do.
Oh, yeah.
Do Wah Diddy Diddy Dum Diddy Do.
That was Do Wah Diddy Diddy, Do Wah Diddy Diddy by Manfred Mann. Another 2.5 minute pop song of joy, joy and genius. I'm going to read a couple of quotes now from George Nicholson / Tallulah Casey, because one of the central aspects of the book is that I think there's two things that teenage girls talk about all the time. Three things that teenage girls talk about all the time. They talk about other girls all the time, relentlessly, talking about gossip all the time, all the time. They talk about bodies. Unfortunately, it's usually along the lines of, you know, oh, I'm so fat. And I wish I'd never, ever said that as a teenager, because I definitely wasn't. But also, I wish I'd kind of appreciated myself a little bit more. So they talk about bodies. And the third thing, and probably the thing they talk about most, although they talk about girls a lot, although they talk about bodies a lot, they talk about boys. Talk about boys all the time. All the time. I think if you could kind of dissect a brain of a teenage girl, I'm obviously talking about a very specific, not even mentioning any queer girls, but I would say that, you know, kind of for most teenage girls, I think, most straight teenage girls, boys are a big part of their existence. And you can correct me if you're wrong, and I know there's obviously exceptions, but I do remember that my brain as a teenager, I think if you could dissect my brain as a teenager, it would have been at least 30% boys and crushes, which is really saying something. So, I mean, if I was only devoting, I would say I only devoted about 20% of my brain to actual schoolwork. Quite a lot of it was devoted to gossip and reading books and just pointless trivia, pointless knowledge that will never serve me well. But most of it was thinking about boys all the time. And that's what they do in the Georgia books all the time. There's some of the best quotes are about them, because in Withering Tights, that's the Tallulah Casey book, the first book, she says he had everything a dream boy should have, back, front, sides, everything, ahead. Georgia Nicholson says, I can already feel myself getting fed up with boys and I haven't had anything to do with them yet. And the final ones, they keep trying to get all their information from Cosmo, which, as we all know, is a font of useless, rubbish knowledge. And Georgia sums this up quite accurately and says, I'm going to become a writer for Cosmo. You don't have to make any sense at all. Or maybe I'll be a bloke. They don't have to make sense either. And their discussion of basically boys kind of, I don't know, when you're a teenager, I think you can make a lot out of nothing. Small things, you know, molehills become mountains. And, you know, one of the main funny scenes that I remember is they're constantly talking about, what does it mean when a boy says, see you later? Like, do you mean, you know, just see you later, or like, see you later? Or, you know, but what does that mean? I mean, did he mean see you later? Or just see you later? Like, all the time, pages and pages go on about this, pages and pages dedicated to three words. And that's such an accurate reflection of how the tiniest details of anything can become absolutely magnified in the teenage brain, the teenage girl brain. No matter, you know, what your sexual attraction, if someone who you are attracted to talks to you, your brain fuses and you just short circuit and can't use real words. And the fact that they just said see you later means a real lot. It means an awful lot to you. I mean, what does that mean? And I really wish there was kind of a follow-up. I wish he'd written a follow-up of Georgia and the Ace Gang at university, because there's no technology in any of the books. They were far too early for even texting, really. And I really wish I could see what Georgia had done with MSN Messenger. I really wish what she'd done with texting. Oh, the amount of analysis that Georgia Nicholson could have poured into a text message. Oh, she'd have been struggling over it for days. You know, but what does that mean? He put one X instead of three. I don't know, Jazz. I just don't understand. You know, it's just insane. Some people could argue that this means that the books are just tropes and cliches put together. Oh, teenage girls are obsessed with boys and stuff. But, yeah, they are. I'm really sorry to shatter any illusions. And Louise Renison, you know, she had readings and cut short because people were outraged and horrified. Oh, that's unsuitable. She's like, well, show me a 9 or 10 or 11-year-old girl who hasn't talked about her body, hasn't talked about boobs and legs, you know. And especially now, you know, increasingly now, I think, you know, seeing pictures of, I can't blame everything on her, but Kim Kardashian, you know, all over the media, like, what, you know, I babysit, and that's you hear about it a lot. And I think that it's a more accurate reflection of girls than I think some idealistic adults would like to portray. So see you later, and what does that mean, talking about boys all the time. And I think it's fair to admit that absolutely everyone, if you knew what was right for you, you were hashtag Team Dave the Laugh before we knew what hashtags were, but you were always on Dave the Laugh's side. Dave the Laugh, God, everyone wanted Dave the Laugh to be their boyfriend, or I don't know, I did anyway. We're going to have another song now, and then we're going to come back. This is in honour of Dave the Laugh, because I think that's the thing about the books. Like, Georgia doesn't realise for a long time that you don't have to go out with Robbie the Sex God or Massimo the Italian Stallion or any of the other kind of boys who take her fancy, because in the end, the person who makes her laugh is the person who really likes her. And she realizes that she really likes him. This is Merry Happy by Kate Nash. Mm-hmm.
watching me like you never watched no one. Don't tell me that you didn't try and check out my bum, cause I know that you did, cause your friend told me that you liked it. Gave me those pearls and I thought they were ugly. Don't you try and tell me that you never loved me. I know that you did, cause you said it and you wrote it down. Dancing at discos, eating cheese on toast. Yeah, you made me merry, made me very, very happy. But you obviously, you didn't wanna stick around. Dancing at discos, eating cheese on toast. Yeah, you made me merry, made me very, very happy. But you obviously, you didn't wanna stick around. So I learnt from you. Do, do, do. Ta-do, do.
Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do
was Merry Happy by Kate Nash, which is all about a guy who makes a girl very, very happy just by all the simple things, but then leaves. We'll just ignore that bit. Georgia eventually, and so does Tallulah in Wuthering Heights, and so does Mia in Princess Diaries. They all realise that the right guy is the one who makes you laugh and is your friend, which I think is a good... In contrast to a lot of kind of teen fiction romance novels where bad boys and why they, you know, recent articles include bad boys and why they should stay in fiction, you know, it teaches it. I think it's good to have realistic, more realistic realizations of what love can be or relationships can be, you know, go out with the person who you're friends with. And I think that's really accurately summed up in Catelyn Moran's book, in How to Be a Woman, and I'm just going to read a short excerpt from that, and which kind of sums up, like, it sums up that lesson that I think people kind of have to learn. And every Thursday I would invite over Pete from Melody Maker, cook him soup and tell him all these stories while we played records and cried laughing. Then in the middle of February my mood suddenly changed. I woke one Monday morning to find an odd albatross and happiness had descended. It wasn't depression or misery, it was both more restless and more hopeful than that. I felt suspended, a combination of waiting for something and missing something terribly, even though I'd never had it. Indeed, not only had I never had it, I also had no idea what it was. The source of my blues absolutely baffled me. I spent a week wandering around my flat, deflated, clueless as to what it meant. I'd pick something up and then put it down again, going, sadly, no, that's not it. The disappointment was crushing. After a week of this, my subconscious, as if exasperated by my dimness, finally spelled it out for me. I went to bed and dreamed I was on the escalators at Baker Street Underground Station, going up. The escalator seemed impossibly high. I couldn't even see the top. It was going to be a long, long time before I got to the turnstiles. It's going to take forever to get up there, I exclaimed. It's okay, a voice said. I turned around and saw Pete standing behind me. I'm here, he said simply. Oh, I said, waking up. I'm in love. I'm in love with Pete. He's what's not here. I really like that excerpt, and it's just so funny in kind of, in comparison to these teen girl novels, which take ages and ages and ages, you know, ten books in the series, and they finally realise at the end that, you know, the funny boy was the one who they should have been with all the time. The nice, funny boy was the one they should have been with. That's a lesson that I think is great to take away in teen fiction. And then the last issue that I'd like to talk about is this body image issue, which I think I've kind of talked about loads of other stuff, and we've really skipped around here, and it's been a real mishmash of a show. I'm so emotionally attached to this subject, I think it's not been maybe my most objective show, but it's been fun. For someone with such obsessive body image problems, Georgia is really, really confident. Like, she has absolutely no problem kind of going up to boys she likes or standing in the middle of people, just making an absolute fool out of herself. Like, she just really doesn't care. I mean, she's really, really self-confident about her nose, and she thinks it's absolutely massive. But she has no worries about just kind of going along and just, you know, pushing, you know, making the German teacher fall into the Seine and out of the back of trains and things. Oh, poor Herr Camier, he suffered a lot. She's really confident, and so is Tallulah, and by the end of the Princess Diaries, so is Mia. I think that's quite a nice lesson to take away as well, that you might not always be the best or the funniest or the cleverest or the most beautiful person in the room. And I'm not saying that all of those are equal things to be, and you should aspire to be one more than the other. But you can still be confident and, you know, stick up for yourself and be funny, but admit when you're wrong. Big lessons from teen girl fiction, I think. And finally, I think the thing is, they're all written as diaries and letters because in some ways we're quite often told as teenage girls that your view doesn't really matter. And I've sort of said that, you know, through this show. I've talked about how silly teen girls are and how quite a lot of the humour in these books, when you reread them as an adult, comes from the fact that they are silly girls, and quite often they're patronised as being silly little girls. Oh, what are you doing? But I think if that's why it's always relegated to diaries and letters, you know, I haven't seen a diary or letter epistolary fiction book in for teens for quite a while. I mean, I'm sure there are some, but I haven't seen them around, because I think that more and more girls in teen fiction are becoming louder and their voices are becoming stronger. And there's no need to relegate them to pages. You can have your characters just say them out loud and speak out as they would. And I think that's a good thing. That is a good thing. Although these still make me laugh and they make me feel very, very happy. We're going to have our last song now. This is the last show of term. I'm hopefully going to keep doing some over the Easter holidays, and I've got some really great ideas for what we're going to do. But the last song that we're going to play out with is Girls and Boys in Love by The Rumble Strips. Again, this is from Angus Songs and Perfect Snogging, the film. And all I'd like to say is just go away and read some teen girl fiction, and be glad that maybe the voices are getting stronger, but also be happy that they taught us some really good lessons. Yeah.